You're listening to Around Comics, episode 92.
Chicago, this is Around Comics, a roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I'm joined, as always, by the co-host of the show, Mr. Brian Salazar.
Hello.
And Mr. Tom Caters.
Hello.
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 Hello. How are you?
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's going on,
man?
Tom?
Hey, this could be a great episode.
That's the Mike Norton voice.
Yeah.
He gets all silly.
Hey, you shut your mouth.
Yeah. Well, this week we're going to be talking about 52.
Fuck it.
52.
52 is just about done, and we figured it was time for us to take a look back on the events that have happened in the last 52
weeks. Perfect timing.
Divide it up evenly. The first 49 weeks, and then we'll cover the last three.
Yeah, actually, I got an email from Greg Rocky. He's like, why didn't you just wait 2 weeks?
No!
We couldn't.
Greg, there's a reason why.
Because we didn't want to spoil everything.
There's an internal logic until you've heard every episode we've done. You won't understand.
There are predictions to be made.
There's no plot holes. We just haven't gotten to it yet.
Well, folks, I want to let you know that this episode of Around Comics is sponsored by InStockTrades.com.
Waiting for the trade has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more, all at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. Whether you're buying an absolute edition or catching up with showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
Absolutely, and thank you to everyone at InStockTrades.com. Believe me, it is easy to get to that $50 order.
Very easy.
Yeah.
Too easy.
Too frightening. Quiet.
Your wife is frightened.
She should be.
Isn't she? All those hardcovers showing up.
And they're all going on vacation with me.
You should buy them all from Mark,
a separate suitcase.
Yeah, look, he needs
Mark
it.
Mark who?
Dark Tower Comics.
From Dark Tower? Well, that's,
he hosts look at him.
Well, Around Comics is recorded every Friday at Dark Tower Comics at 7 o'clock.
We had an audience. It's
like 10:30 here. Dark Tower.
Place for comics.
Dark Tower is located at 4835 Northwestern Avenue in Chicago. If you're in the area, please drop by. We would love to meet you.
Well, since we're all at Dark Tower Comics, we should also mention that your Around Comics experience isn't complete until you've read this week's Long Box of Love. Each Thursday episode of Around Comics has a wonderfully handcrafted webcomic from Brian Bowles. Check it out every Thursday at AroundComics.com.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, our main topic, as we just said, is going to be 52. And just over a year ago, DC announced their year-long weekly series. After the events of Infinite Crisis, the DCU skipped forward a complete year. We were told that 52 would fill in the blanks and show us how the world would exist without Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. 52 has done all of that and more. It's delivered stories with little-known and underused characters. 52 has kept readers coming back to their local comic shops each week to solve the mystery of what is 52. This week, we're going to break down each storyline of the epic and give our predictions on how the series will conclude before moving on to Countdown. For those of you that haven't read 52 and still plan to, beware that we're going to go in-depth in our review of the series, so spoilers ahead.
Spoilers!
Watch out!
Turn it off now if you haven't read it. Spoilers.
Yeah, we're gonna get into the series. I think we're gonna dig deep. It's made top of the stack once or twice.
A couple times. I think I picked it three or four times.
We haven't talked a whole lot about the series, and it's kind of been enjoying it as it's been going along. So yeah, it was time to dedicate an episode to it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, guys,
When's are we going to add on a Queen and Country part at the end? Or?
No, the Queen and Country episode's coming.
Oh, God.
Oh. We have to wait for Volume 1 to wrap up, which I've heard that
is just happening very soon. Oh, God. Jesus Christ.
On a side note, I'm listening
to
totally
walked into that landmine.
I'm listening to the Crankcast with Scotty Young on there, who's listened to like 50 of our episodes in a week or whatever. And he's like, yeah, those guys... they just love Greg Rucka,
but
they haven't gotten to the point. I don't think he's gotten to the point yet where we've acknowledged the fact that it's a joke.
It sickens us even.
And he won't hear this until after. He's so far behind. That's
he'll catch
thing.
Up, but he's obsessive compulsive.
He's a time traveler.
He may already be listening.
He wants to come on our show, but I refuse to let him on until he's caught all the way up. Once you hear this, and if you're caught up.
Well, today's date is April 13th.
Friday the
13th, yes.
If you're listening to this on April... Whoa, you can't...
If he's listening to this... Oh, dude, you just blew my mind.
It's Grant Morrison's
yeah,
story.
Yeah, Grant Morrison, Grant Thornton, you can never really catch up. Oh, we're either in the past or slightly ahead of you all the time.
Oh, my.
Well, guys, when DC announced that they were going to come out with a weekly series...
Skeets could catch up.
That was going to... fill in, you know, they announced 1 year later, and then they announced, I guess at the same time, that 52 was going to tell the story of what happened in the DCU in this year after Infinite Crisis.
Uh-huh.
What did you guys think right off the bat about that, just that concept in general?
I didn't think they were going to be able to get out 52 issues weekly for an entire year.
That something was going to happen to delay.
Yeah, something would happen it would get delayed.
Yeah, I was... I gotta say, initially I wasn't really that interested in a weekly book about a universe, a DC universe without Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. I kind of felt like it was just an excuse for an event, and I wasn't sure how interesting, you know, this same story for 52 issues, 52 weeks.
It's for 52 weeks in a row, we're going to tell stories with Booster Gold and The Question and Black Adam and Starfire and Animal Man and Dibny. And you're like, ooh, sign me up.
Yeah, yeah.
I was.
Well, you were, Tom, certainly.
Like, yes, finally.
My time has come.
I think it's interesting that you say something like that, because I think what excited me about doing it was sort of the idea that DC sort of has their trinity that they've set up. You have your Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And one of the things I was really excited about was taking 52 issues of a series to really talk about really a lot of characters who aren't even B-list characters.
Right.
A lot of characters who are just... Almost. 15 years ago were on the trash heap of DC.
A lot of people,
you know, like,
didn't even know who The Question was.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of characters like that, and take those characters. So I was intrigued, and... to see them approach it this way and be like, we're going to take characters that nobody... I mean, like, Booster Gold hasn't been anyone who can sell a comic ever.
Right.
You know, like...
He's
at the
always,
best, he was sort of a joke.
Yeah,
he was sort of a joke. And so it was intriguing to see them approach it this way.
Well, what I like about 52, and we'll get into this as we get into the storylines, is that DC has a very rich history that I think a lot of comic fans out there don't even realize. You know, especially I think that, you know, Sal and I come from a generation that really grew up on Marvel. There's a lot of Marvel fans out there that didn't get into DC for whatever reason, you know, kind of skirted on the outside of it, and a lot of DC history kind of washed over us without us even noticing it. And, you know, a lot of that even goes back to, you know, Silver Age and Golden Age. So 52 has done an amazing job of kind of recapturing a lot of that heritage and reinvigorating it for a new generation of people that may not have ever read it before.
I also think the thing they've been most successful with in 52 to me is that when you read those old Earth 2 stories, the idea that you can have this entirely separate narrative from everything else that's going on in whatever huge universe you have. You have the DC universe, and you have everything that's going on. You have all these storylines. But really, 52 as an event, it's in and of itself what it is. Like, you don't need...
I don't even want to call it an event.
Yeah, you
it's
don't
not.
Need to read anything else to get what's going on in 52. You just have to read 52. Mm-hmm. And it has that sort of magic, I think, that a lot of the older DC stuff we had with the multiple universes, where you have this little... there's a little corner of the DC universe, just like how Earth 2 used to be, where you don't need to know everything else. You can just read this one little section, and it's got its own little contained story.
And you'll be okay.
Yeah, and you're okay. You'll be okay with that. Like, if you're confused, it's not because you're missing a crossover, or you're missing, like, some other issue that's in it. It's like you need to find out what that character is about, which I think is sort of a weird thing that happened that I didn't anticipate that happening until I've gotten probably about, you know, 30-35 issues in, where I'm like, you know, this is just like what, you know, the Earth 2 stories were like. It's just, mm-hmm, a separate story that has the same DC feel, but it's different. You know?
Well, I think it continues sort of a theme that DC's been doing for a while now, which is, and I think Geoff Johns kind of started it along with Brad Meltzer, is that, you know, they're telling these stories that are sort of self-contained, but they're also layered with a lot of the history or, mm-hmm, characters that you haven't seen a lot, and there's a lot more depth to them than maybe initially you see. And if you want to, you can go and find out all that history, and it enhances the story for you. But if you don't, it doesn't necessarily take away from it. It doesn't force you to do that. And I think, for me, and there was an interesting article on Heidi McDonald's The Beat about, mm-hmm, somebody who had posted on a forum. It's like, oh, well, what's the big deal? I completely understand a story if I spend an hour on Wikipedia looking up stuff.
Yeah, do you want to spend an hour on Wikipedia?
Well, yeah, that was the thing. And it's like, that's been one of my favorite things about 52 and
like
other
that,
books,
yeah,
you know, JSA and JLA and stuff. It's like, I've enjoyed a lot of reading that book and then going to Wikipedia and looking up these characters and finding out more about their histories, and it's made it that much more of an interesting read for me. But at the same time, I don't think it forces you so much to do that. I think you can read it without having to know every single thing.
Well, I think it's a testament that it intrigues you enough that you want to go and find out about these. You know, I'm not an old school DC fan. You know, I'm becoming more a DC fan all the time, but I wanted to find out more about Wadey Stix, which we'll get into that, you know, later on. It's like, wow,
and
this
you
is
find
a,
out
yeah,
that it's not really that.
It's not a
old
legacy character.
No.
This character actually was created in 52.
Yeah, it just gets mixed in there.
I was like, oh
mixed
wow,
in with everything else. Yeah, yeah.
That could have been, that character could have been 30 years old,
and I
wouldn't know.
Well, I think also, I think one of the cool things that you were mentioning about sort of Johns and Meltzer, I also think you see a little bit of all the writers in it. You see a lot of what Morrison did. I think a lot of people sometimes forget when Morrison came in and started writing JLA, how he completely changed sort of the concept of what DC was about. It was DC for a long time was afraid to put their big characters out front. Like, who wants to read a story about seven Greek gods, you know, like coming down and taking care of all our problems? So he went ahead and he did that. He said, you can write, you know, interesting stories about these characters. You can write a great story involving Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Green Lantern, which I think has set it up in a way that you can go after that and you can write great stories about the lesser characters, because you've set up a universe where it's okay to make the big characters interesting. So now work your way down. You
well, what I love
is that
these secondary characters, they know that. They know that that's where they are.
Yeah. They're not Superman. They're not Batman. Yeah.
They understand their place in the superhero food chain, and they know that they're not the main.
They're
players.
All disposable.
Yeah. Well, and that actually adds kind of to the intensity of it, is that, you know, any of these characters in this book could die.
Not Lobo.
Main man. That's what works for Lobo. You can kill him, man.
Hi, this is Andy Parks. You are listening to Around Comics.
Let's start diving in to each storyline, and hopefully by the end here we'll kind of have a complete package of what 52
what
has been.
What is 52?
I don't know yet.
I don't either.
As 52 opens, the first storyline that I kind of was able to pick out was, you know, with the absence of Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman, there's a vacuum. and Booster Gold kind of seizes the opportunity to try and fill that superhero void and become a mainline superhero. And so that's the first storyline that I picked out for 52 is Booster Gold and his adventure. Tom, if you want to kick us off with that. And
well, I think what ties a lot of these stories all together is that, you know, about 2 years ago, or maybe like a year and a half ago, there was a lot of talk about how they want to make the DC universe sort of brighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people misunderstood that. It's not necessarily that the universe that they live in is brighter, but I think a lot of these characters are maybe brighter, more heroic characters than you think. Because I think the whole theme of the Booster Gold story, and a lot of these stories, is about these people who maybe you think one thing, but in the end, when it really comes down to it, they end up being a hero. You know, there's, you know, we're spoiling stuff, obviously. Booster Gold Supernova. You know, but you don't know that until it's in play. Yeah, I know.
Right.
But you get that reveal, and you're like, you know, all your expectations is you've read, like, 16 issues of Booster Gold just being a dick.
He is the antithesis of anything you would ever want. He's the irredeemable
Ant-Man. He's an opportunist.
Ant-Man.
Yeah. He's an opportunist.
And then all of a sudden you get that, but you get to the issue, like, 38, where it all gets turned around, and you realize Booster was doing that. He knew what he was doing
the
whole time.
He actually sacrificed his self-image for the greater good.
And you're like, well, yeah, Booster Gold is a hero. And it's sort of like a weird twist because he's not Superman. He's not like the complete altruistic character. Because he doesn't start off being like, I'm going to save everyone. But when he's presented with the choice of like, you know, do I save everyone or what do I do? He does it. I mean, he does what's necessary to, you know.
And I think using Superman as a comparison is really interesting because that is who Lex Luthor thinks
Supernova is.
And Cassie, which we'll get into in a second, Wonder Girl, thinks that Supernova is Connor.
Right. Right.
And so there's that, you know, the Superman, you know, element to Booster Gold.
Well, it's
character.
All very good illusion. I mean, they obviously. I mean, what I loved about that reveal and everything was, you know, they existed at the same time, Supernova and Booster Gold, and Booster hated Supernova and hated that this other character was coming in just at the time where Booster was at his lowest point,
muscle
and taking
his on
limelight.
His territory.
Yeah. And you know, there was a great. I just happened to reread it today. There was a great scene where they actually have a fight, the two, you know, Supernova and Booster Gold, and it's like, you know, Supernova's berating Booster of his, you know, greed and why he's doing the things he's doing, and it's like, when you reread it after knowing that it's him,
Booster
he's telling himself, he's telling himself these things, but it was just a great sleight of hand, because it's like the last person you thought was Booster.
Well, also, Supernova was a, I believe, a sort of a like a disguise that Superman wore at one time, you know, like Supernova. The name Supernova is not
he had used it
previously in like World's Finest or you know whatever.
Some book.
It's not a new, yeah. I mean, it's a callback to an old, you know, Silver Age idea.
Well, they certainly did a great job, I thought, of you know, misdirecting.
So, who do you think
that
wrote the majority of the Booster Gold Supernova?
There's weird twists in all of it.
I think any of the time travel stuff, I think you have to say Morrison had a hand in it. I don't know if he wrote it strictly.
Yeah,
but
you get Johns is going to do the Booster Gold series, which makes me think that maybe he had sort of a bit of a hand in the Booster.
Well, I think more of the sort of day-in, day-out dialogue and characterization, but you know, sort of the twists and turns.
Is evil.
More of the plot line.
So. Yeah, I think almost like a Skeets breakdown and a fill-in kind of thing where you know, I don't know how much typing Grant Morrison was doing in this series, but I think you know, he had a lot of the sort of ideas for where things were going to go.
I think it's great that you make Skeets evil.
And you know that, you know, we're sitting here at issue 50 now, and the Skeets storyline has not been resolved.
No,
we've got two more issues, and I figure a lot of that's going to have to deal with World War III, as you know, we'll get into a little bit later. But you know, Skeets was, you know, what a brilliant move of making this
something.
You know, it's not even a secondary character, but like, you know, a secondary character to like a third tier hero, and he has become a major player in this series.
Well, I love is also the fact that Rip Hunter, who showed up for exactly
four panels,
is a huge player because he knows something that's going on because he's a time traveler.
Well, issue the six, yeah. you get into Rip Hunter's lab, and it has basically everything that is going to happen in the DCU in the next year is on that chalkboard.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of archaic sayings that we find out later. You know, we think what it means, or you know, they obviously laid the groundwork for that kind of thing. And you know, that was one of the things that I love about this series is that they put in so many little hints and things that you could go back to and look at and go, oh, well, there it was. There was, you know, they knew from the beginning what they were doing, so it was like they were able to lay in all this stuff that you might miss even, you know, and I did the first time around a lot of the stuff and didn't catch it till later or somebody said something or that kind of thing, but it just, you know, it was a great factor in the series that you can go back and reread it. You can go back and pick up stuff that you'll surely have missed the first time around reading it because...
I want to know what happens to Booster's ancestor. The one
he's
on a time loop.
The one who fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it threw him into a time loop or something?
He threw him through time. Yeah, find out what was on the chalkboard.
The Skeets reveal was just a holy crap moment. I mean, 52 is filled with oh crap moments, and that was when it's like, it's Skeets, you're shitting me. Yeah.
Well, it was really, you know, brilliant how, you know, in issue 6, Booster goes into Rip Hunter's lab and he sees all these pictures and stuff with arrows saying it's his fault, and we all assumed that
it was pointing to Booster.
It was all pointing to Skeets.
And that's, like you said, still hasn't been played out, but it's like, what is Skeets? You know, what is he searching for? What is Skeets trying to accomplish?
I think the question is it Skeets or is it someone using Skeets?
Skeets is working for Darkseid.
Is that your theory?
No, I don't know.
See, I think it is Skeets. I think it's Skeets because the entire time, you know, like, history is so screwed up that he's trying to figure out why so that he can fix it. Because he can't sort of function otherwise. He has no function. If he doesn't know what's going on, what purpose
that
does
is
he
his
serve?
Function. And it's, you know, and the other twist to that is that Skeets now has the negative zone inside of him.
Well, he hit the phantom zone.
Wrong universe.
And all the people inside of it were wearing glasses like Mr. Mind.
That's a whole nother. Where is Mr. Mind? I don't know what's going on with Mr. Mind.
Let's not go on.
Okay. All right. Next, and this is kind of a little mini storyline in 52, and that was Cassie, Wonder Girl from Teen Titans, and the cult of Kal-El, and their belief in Kryptonian resurrection, and that Connor was gonna come back.
Well, I think this actually ties in far more with the Ralph story too.
But her thinking that Supernova was Connor, and
yeah, I think
using it as a segue to the Ralph Dibbs
Well, I was just like, the Ralph story is
it's
way
the Ralph
more
story.
It's more of to me the casting the cult of Kal-El thing is just the whole theme of this to me. Also, there's a huge theme of characters come back for Batman, Superman, or Wonder Woman, but dead spouses of C-list characters don't necessarily always come back. Yeah. You know, like, Superboy might not come back. You know, there's the part where Ralph is with... He's at the resurrection ceremony where they're trying to bring back Sue. And he's got all the other people. He's got Zor-El and he's got Green and Metamorpho. He's got all these people to come back from the dead. Hal.
His resurrected friends.
Yeah, and they're all like, well, we don't know how it works. You know, like, you know, just telling him, you know, she might not come back. You know, it doesn't always work. It doesn't always happen. Which I think was a really self-aware moment in the comic to be like, not everyone, you know.
Everyone likes
to say everyone comes back. Well, not everyone comes back. You know, Ralph might not get his wife back.
And I thought what was interesting, and it played out later on in the book too, but it was sort of a precursor to it, was, you know, we're watching Ralph sort of lose it, you know, as he's going along. He's searching for Sue, and he's becoming more and more desperate, and he's trying to figure out some way to get her back. And every time we think he's like over the edge, he kind of comes to his senses and he comes back to where, you know,
he just enough to not go over the edge.
And in that particular scene, you know, it's like he brought those people there to, you know, figure out if this was possible, you know, or if he's just so desperate that he'll believe anything. And, you know, it was really a great, like, sort of flip, you know, it's like, because he sits there and goes, oh, well, you know what, it is all bull. It's all, you know, there's a con man, but then once that happens, there's like this moment of,
Oh crap, what have I done?
Because, well, right, but we don't know that, you know what I mean?
At the time,
it's
not
like, wow, what's going on?
30-ish.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And, you know, you think for a moment that maybe there is a chance that she's going to come back, and it drives him even further away from everyone else and further into desperation, which leads to Faust and you
hurt for Ralph. Anyone out there that is married feels that pain of what it would be like to lose a spouse.
Sure.
And just that, I mean, he is an absolutely broken person.
I think the series overall, if you look at most of the storylines, it's about loss.
Yes.
You look at Montoya losing her partner, you know, and Crispus Allen, and, you know, trying to figure out who she is without him.
You look at an old love in Kate Kane.
You look at Ralph, obviously, with Sue, and losing his mind.
Cassie with Connor.
But, you know, look at Animal Man, his family, you know. Adam Strange losing his eyes, his sight. Black Adam. It's all about loss and
I think it's about loss, but I also think what separates it from being a huge bummer is the fact that most of these characters, they go past their loss.
They're heroes.
What makes them heroic, is how do they prevail?
I mean, Ralph overcomes, you know, he overcomes sort of his loss. Adam Strange, well, you're seeing, we haven't reached the end, so we don't know how certain characters are going to overcome it.
Well,
but
did Ralph overcome it? I mean, he did.
Yeah, I think he
briefly
did.
I think
how they overcome their loss.
But revenge is not necessarily.
He didn't. It wasn't revenge. Each character that has
he didn't
lost,
lose it.
They end up finding out who they are because of that.
Well, yeah, that's the other part of it, searching for who you are without this other person. And in some cases, it's
a
good thing.
You talk about the Ralph storyline.
I think the Ralph story sort of transcends the revenge storyline. I think because he gets his revenge in a way, but also it's sort of redemptive in the fact that he isn't completely lost. He isn't a complete mess. He wasn't the one being manipulated by Faust. He was always sort of in control, because when he, you know, he had the wishing gun, which I love. Yeah, the wish when he shot himself when he had the gun in his mouth in the first issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that
know,
was when he made his wish to be back with Sue, and everything after that is all part of his wish. Getting back with Sue. No matter what happens, he was always Faust. Everything that happens after that was always based on that. Ralph really, at some point, was always in control of what was going on. Maybe he didn't understand
how it was going to play out,
but in, what was it, issue 42, Ralph screams that at Faust, you know, you were under my spell. He knew that at some point that Faust was the helmet of fate, for those who aren't reading.
and just another example of, like, the hints and stuff that are dropped in is, like, in that first issue when he's on the phone with, what's her name?
Fire.
Fire. And he's like, oh, there's nothing really left to move out except for a bunch of crazy, you know, gadgets or whatever left over from, you know, and he's holding the gun at that time. And it's like, but you don't think about it at that time, that gun, you just think it's a gun, you know?
Well, there was this scene where he had the gun in his mouth.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, you know, he did pull the trigger. He wished to be back with Sue. He knew, you know.
Did they show that? I mean,
no, but there's sort of like a weird implication that at some point I think that's something that needs to be wrapped up in a way, is what exactly
did Ralph wish?
What did he wish? What did he, you know, Ralph's in control in a way, but he's out of control in another way. Because he's obviously on a path towards something that he set in motion, but he doesn't know.
Do you think part of that is him having to, before he can be with Sue, he has to accept the fact that she's not going to come back? Is that maybe part of it?
I think Ralph's story, in a lot of ways, is almost... And I told David Price this once, is that he's a metaphor for all the longtime DC readers who all want people who complained about Sue dying. You know, like, do you want your wish to come true? Do you really want
her to
Sue
come
to
back?
Come back? Like, is this a story? Can you reset everything? Is that okay? Is that what you really want? Like, can you have a resolution where you're going to be okay with her not coming back? Or is that the only way? Is that the only way
you'll
ever
be
happy? Is that the only way
she comes back?
Yeah, and just sort of like with Ralph, is that the only way Ralph will ever be happy? Is there no other end for Ralph other than Sue coming back? Is that all his character is ever going to be from now on? Which I think is what this story is about. Like, and you're starting to see that sort of... But I also think it's not necessarily bad if he finds a way to get her back, because he's earned it. You know, he sort of played a certain set of rules.
But he's dead.
But he's dead. Well, he's coming back. There's no way. Ralph
will
come back.
But once again, that goes back to trying to find out who you are without that other person, which is a theme in a lot
of
different characters.
This will be interesting, because I think it is like a lot of readers. Like, is there a happy ending without Sue coming back? Is there?
What is interesting about Sue is that if you kind of trace things back, the whole line that DC has been rolling out started with the death of Sue Dibney. If you go back to Identity Crisis, that's really when the whole kind of like restructuring of the DCU started.
I also think you've seen, I mean, there was the issue where Ralph, the Spectre takes Ralph to Eclipso.
Right.
You know, to like,
and offers him the chance,
you know,
to
chance
get back.
To do, you know, what he wants. But he, you know, he puts Jean Loring in a loop to see what she did, which, I mean, that's the weird thing about the Ralph story, is at times Ralph does things that I don't think are morally necessarily acceptable all the time, but also you have this sense that you want Ralph to win. So I think Ralph in a lot of ways is like the most human story in all of the stories, because he's not a superhero.
Well, they made a very big point of him giving up his powers.
But then, you know, when it's revealed that he hasn't been drinking whiskey out of his flask, he's been drinking Gingold. And when he has the, you know, that, to me, that was one of the most satisfying issues, was to be like, you know, Ralph isn't crazy. Ralph isn't losing it.
He kind of had it the entire time.
He figured it out at some point. He sort of brought himself all back together. And now, because even though he dies, I get the sense in that whole story that Ralph knows what he's doing. That was what he...
The whole time? He knows that that's where he's going?
He knows
before he was the Elongated Man, he's always been a
detective.
Well,
no, just in that issue, when he confronts Neron and Neron kills him, and he's...
He
like,
knows at that point.
He knows... He's planned this out. Like, he's, when he kills him, and I forget what he said, he was like, something about what his second wish was when he pulled the trigger the second time to get fouled. Like, at that point, I feel like Ralph knows he's got a plan, you know, and you see the wedding ring on the grave. You know, like, Ralph has got, at that point, he knows what he's doing. He has some sort of plan, whether or not it works or what the end result of that plan is.
Yeah. I wonder, did you ever get a sense leading up to that or looking back at it when... Yeah, because there was certainly a point where he wasn't in control.
Yeah.
You know, and he had sort of lost it to a point. He was, you know, did you ever get a sense of when he got that back?
You know,
I think it's all represented by how much facial hair he has.
I think it's...
No.
The only time I picked on him is when I started getting suspicious about the Helmet of Fate, which I had told you. I was like, you know, why is the Helmet of Fate constantly wanting Ralph to do things without asking about it? And why isn't there a Helmet of Fate?
Why is it rushing him?
The most serene, like... aside from whatever continuity things you want to be like, oh, the Helmet of Fate doesn't have a universe inside
right.
of it. Or the Helmet Fate was always like this really serene, like patient character, and now all of a sudden you have the Helmet of Fate who doesn't want to explain anything to Ralph
right.
ever. Doesn't want to just be like, you
Come
have
on,
to do this.
We
do
gotta
this.
Go.
You have to do this. You have to do that. And then it was also suspicious that they spent so much time on Faust not having a soul. And I was like, wait a second, why were they talking about that for so long?
Stepping outside of 52 for a second, now Faust reappears after 52.
Yeah, in Justice League.
In JLA.
Still trying to get that soul.
Still trying.
Yeah. So,
do
so,
what I can.
So Faust does get out of this trap that...
Well, his physically he doesn't. You never see his body leave.
Okay.
You only see his astral image.
Projection?
Yeah, astral image.
But only Doctor Strange
yeah.
did that.
Yeah, exactly. You see its astral image.
So,
and Neuron can just stay locked up in there forever.
But is the Ralph storyline, is it complete at this point?
No, Ralph comes back.
Okay.
Somehow.
Okay.
But whether or not Sue comes back, who knows? But I think that's the point. No? Will you be happy
so
with
explain
that
one thing to me, just because I can't really remember it. Faust actually owed the
Neuron a soul.
He owes Neuron a soul, and
because
that he
his soul is not good enough.
And
he kept trading it.
Yeah,
and so he was trying to get Ralph's soul.
Yep,
is what it was. Yep. Okay,
and Ralph.
I thought that was
the
case, but I just didn't.
That was his whole thing.
All right. Well, we'll get out of the astral projections and the mystical
astral
side.
Projection magic
and
blah,
come
blah, blah.
Come back
God,
more
nerds.
More to Earth and that being the Lex Luthor Metagene Everyman project. And
oh God.
Infinity Inc. So,
Everyman.
You know, I think the core of this is that in a world without Superman, Lex Luthor is going to have a master plan to get as much power as he can.
I liked about it was sort of a return to Lex Luthor being sort of a borderline lunatic instead of being like, you know, I understand why they made him sort of a corrupt
politician,
businessman, but really like, I mean, he was president, you know, like... all right,
Lex should have loftier goals.
Yeah,
or,
like,
you know, it's like,
he got to be president, and he really didn't get what he wanted.
Right.
So, I mean, what do you go from there? It's like, yeah, well, he's just sort of like a lunatic who kind of gets away with shit. Yeah.
You know, he's obsessed with Superman, obviously. I mean, he's...
Well, one of the greatest scenes is the one where he kidnaps Clark Kent and gives him the truth serum. It's like, is Superman supernova? And he's like,
I can
absolutely
definitely
guarantee you that Superman is not supernova. Like, the fact... Because I love that, because Lex Luthor's whole thing is that the reason Lex Luthor loses to Superman isn't because Superman is fast or strong. It's because Lex Luthor has... this fault
he's
in
blinded.
Him. He's blinded to what he could possibly do. Lex Luthor has got every tool possible to beat Superman. He could if he wasn't constantly defeated by his own like inability to recognize what's going on around him. I mean, that's what makes that character... Because
his
humanity.
Ego,
yeah, he's
well,
human.
He wants to be Superman.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
what the Everyman
I mean,
project is. He wants to be Superman.
Hi, this is Jason Aaron, writer of Vertigo, The Other Side, and you're listening to Around Comics. And if you don't sound off that you love the Virgin Mary, I'm going to rip your fucking guts out.
The Everyman project I thought was interesting, and it got Lex involved in the story and what was going on and everything. And I thought, you know, with Steel and everything, it was an interesting concept. My only issue with it was I didn't quite understand some of it as far as Lex's motivation.
Yeah, there's like, weird things that he did.
The reign of Superman.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden, you know, it's like, okay, what was the point of giving powers to all these people just to,
well, I think,
like, take them away all of a sudden?
I think the point in that issue, which I think sort of drives home the fact that he's sort of like a borderline nut, is like he sort of did it just to...
To show everybody that he could?
Just to fuck with Supernova. Because he thinks Supernova is Superman.
Right.
He thinks that, like... Because...
So it was just power. It was just him flexing his muscle to...
I mean, that's how I take it. To just to be
that was
like,
the only part of it. It was just like, well, it just didn't... You know, I was like, okay, he seems to have this really big, elaborate plan, and then all of a sudden flip a switch and turn everybody off.
But I think that's sort of the weird thing about Lex Luthor, is he's got all these huge, elaborate plans, but... His end goal is always sort of like two short steps short of where it should be for him to actually succeed. You know, like he always has a huge plan, but it's always like, you know, if you were really that smart, you'd aim for a little bit higher, you know, like, take all this and do this instead of being like, well, I'm going to end up with it. But that's always, that's something that I think that when Byrne redid Lex Luthor got sort of lost, was the Lex Luthor is, he's not a fuck-up, but his own, he causes his own failures.
Right.
You know, like, it's not...
Well, it's his own ego, and it's not good enough for him to go, you know, and accomplish something so that everyone knows how smart he is. He has to, like...
Show it.
Show it the whole time. Well, that,
it's
you know,
all, it's all pride. It's all pride. And yeah. As we learn about the deadly sins, is that pride is the nastiest of the deadly sins.
And that's horrible sins.
You know, we see Steel and his niece...
Natasha.
And we get some interesting interaction between the Teen Titans and Infinity Inc. Mm-hmm. And I think that Infinity Inc. and some of the members of that team have a very interesting opinion of the DCU. In that, you know, we're tired of these old, washed-up
heroes. Do it
heroes.
Better than those old men in the JSA. Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was a very interesting commentary on the state of superheroes today. It's, you know, it's like these are throwaway, you know, old decrepit heroes, and nobody wants to have anything to do with them anymore.
Well, I think it's interesting that they took on the names of a lot of dead DC characters.
Right.
You
well,
know?
I think that's definitely sort of maybe commentary on what legacies these characters might have and what sometimes happens to them. In the hands of writers or companies, you know, I don't know, you know what I mean? You know, it's like, okay, you have Infinity Inc., which was never, you know, it's obviously not like the JSA or the JLA or something like that, but then you have these, you know, Lex comes in and buys the name. Estate, and uses it to create his own super
and
team.
And remanufactures these, not iconic characters, but this total
characters
vanilla
that have, you know, names that have emotional resonance to characters that
to other characters
that do exist in, you know, the DC universe.
And you see that with
It hurts the JSA to see it's sort of a brief tangent, but a lot of the JSA members are fucking horrible fathers.
Right.
That's a lot of the theme of it, is that they fucked up a lot. Like, Alan Scott really fucked up his relationship with his kids. So to see his dead daughter's name, you know, sort of like thrown in his face is
to advertise.
Using that.
Yeah, and Obsidian. So, you know, it's like, you may, you know, stand for this, but I'm not going to. You know, she wouldn't have wanted this, and I'm going to stand up for my
sister. He's so emotional.
Yeah,
he's unstable. As we've seen,
he's dark
and unstable.
But I think we can all agree with that. The Titans and how they deal with Infinity Inc. I thought was interesting.
Gar. I mean, it wasn't really the Titans so much.
The Titans are a mess.
Yeah.
The Titans are an absolute disaster.
Gar's just trying to hold it together, which is interesting considering he's, for a long time, like the least reliable character in the Titans. Yeah. And
he was the comic relief.
He's the one trying to hold everything together.
And I think it's interesting, 1 year later, he's not on it anymore.
What happened?
In the Doom Patrol.
He's in Doom Patrol.
He's hanging with the Doom Patrol.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Back with the Doom Patrol. Because he was an original member of the Doom Patrol.
Yeah, he was.
So that's kind of interesting. I didn't know that.
Back with Mom and Dad. Next one is one of my favorite storylines in the series, I think, for obvious reasons. That would be the Montoya and Question storyline. And Sal and I were talking about this a little bit today, and you really like the pulp sensibility.
Well, it's funny. I said this to Tom earlier, is that when I first read 52, that was probably my second least favorite storyline. My first least favorite was the Adam Strange, Animal Man,
Starfire
storyline. Once again, going back to my problems with space stories. But the Montoya Question one was really... I didn't really care for it the first time I read it, but the second time I read 52, it became probably my favorite storyline. And the reason was, is I finally... It's like the Question was a character I didn't know that much about. Montoya, I knew a certain amount from,
Gotham Central
and that. But it really helped me understand, like, who the Question is and why he's called the Question and why he does what he does by... understanding Montoya's journey into trying to figure out who she is, mm-hmm. and eventually becoming the Question, replacing Charlie and becoming the Question herself. And I really enjoyed sort of in the early issues of them, you know, these two characters that didn't know one another that kind of team up and become these, you know, globetrotting adventurers. It gave it to me a very pulpy feel of, you know, Indiana Jones-ish.
It starts, kind of, she can't stand his guts. Every time he shows up, she's like, ugh, again with this guy. And then by the end of it, she even says it's her best friend.
Well, and the other thing was, you know, like their motivation in it was, you know, neither of them really have any, you know, powers. They don't have any powers. They're not superheroes necessarily. They're not out there fighting crime as much as they're trying to
find answers
to what's going on. And it really just sort of struck me as close to like a real life, you know, crime fighting pair. You know, like two ordinary people that just have this drive to go
they're almost our window into this universe. It's like, you know, if any of us could be in 52, it would be in these characters because they are the closest to us.
I'd be Superman.
That are there. You'd be Supernova.
It was just an interesting experience for me to sort of learn about these characters, especially the Question, and understand. You know, because I remember even talking to John Centris, so I'm like, who, you know, the Question, I know the character to some degree, but it's like, what does he do? What are his powers? What? Why does he do what he does? And I didn't quite understand it until I read this again, and then it made so much more sense to me of, like, you know, who he really is and who
just
that character
is. Yeah, I mean, the most important thing is that these two characters didn't know each other.
Mm-hmm.
So the entire relationship is encapsulated within this series.
Right.
You know, what happens, you know, sticks to some degree. That they, I mean, their entire not hating each other to becoming best friends to, you know, Vic Savage dying, you know, is sort of the...
You think he's really gone, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
You think Montoya is the next... She is the Question from now on? See, I don't think so. Is. I don't know.
And I'm okay with her being the Question. I know Centris has problems with it, but I like Montoya. And I think that if there was ever a story where someone kind of earned their way...
No, I understand. I don't have a problem with it. I just, for whatever reason, I don't... I mean, like, Vic knew from the very beginning what he was doing, that he was training her to be the Question. Mm-hmm. But it seemed like he was doing more than that, that he was, like, helping her find herself throughout the entire thing, and becoming the Question was more like a final final step in the process that she had to overcome in order to get to be where she needs to be. And I think I just feel like he's going to come back at some point.
You're
I don't
wrong.
Know. Well, maybe yeah, I could possibly.
You know,
it's
I'm not right.
Shit,
I'm not right.
Know?
Hey.
And don't ask the Question because he lies. What does that mean? Huh?
My favorite line, I was telling you this today, my favorite line out of the series may have been, what's the great thing about answers?
They always lead to more questions.
They lead to more questions. So we'll see how that...
More questions? Two? More than one question?
Lesbian. Why haven't we seen anything about hot lesbian question?
Hot lesbo question?
Yeah,
we haven't really touched on Batwoman, but, you know, Batwoman has become a part of the DC story.
Well, she was. Now she's dying. Well, I don't know.
She's dying as of issue 50.
I think she was much... I think she was more of a plot point on, like, something that propelled the Montoya...
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if she did die and that was the end of that character.
Has she shown up in the DCU post?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, a lot of these characters haven't.
Yeah. To kind of keep the suspense going.
You haven't seen any of them, really.
You know, as of issue 50, Montoya is with...
They'll be listening to this after issue 50, so maybe, like... Something fucking crazy happens, and all this is completely bullshit.
God damn it!
But we'll see how that
wraps up. Three more weeks.
Exactly.
You know? We couldn't just wait three
more
weeks.
That's what Ruckus
said. Oh, well.
Maybe he was right. I don't know.
Hey.
Yeah.
What is
At
he
this
know?
Point, we admit this show is a mistake.
But enjoy it anyway.
Yeah. Big mistake on our part. Sorry, everyone.
All right, now I know probably one of your favorite storylines in 52 is the Black Adam storyline.
Black Adam became one of my favorite characters in the DCU. Even leading up to this, before 52, in the JSA and stuff that he had been in, I really... What I liked about him is his ambiguity, that...
He's a good guy. He's a bad guy.
Well,
he's a good guy.
He wasn't always wrong. You know what I mean? It's like you he gave you a good argument for what he was doing. You know, he had sometimes justification for his actions. Even though you may not agree with his actions, you sometimes understood why maybe he did the things he did, and he became such a sympathetic character, I think.
He's the adult Captain Marvel. He's like... Because the whole thing with Captain Marvel is that you have his alter ego is, you know, Billy Batson, a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And Captain Marvel, even though he's an adult, never really has to deal with reality all that much. Like, he's always sort of presented as being sort of like, everything's okay. Captain Marvel's like a good-hearted person. Billy Batson's parents died, but really, honestly, does Billy Batson get all torn up about it all the time?
He never has to revert. Even when he reverts to Billy, he's not living an adult's life of responsibilities and...
Captain Marvel...
Black
Adam, what makes his character so interesting is it's like... You can have all the wisdom, and you can have all these things... You can have all the wisdom of the gods and everything, but it doesn't necessarily make you happy or make your life... good for you or make you a good person to always be like the wisest thing to do isn't always the best thing for you to do. Like in way back in Egypt when his family was originally killed, the reason he left is because of the same virtues that the gods gave him are the reason why he left. I mean, those same virtues are always the things that are always going to fuck him over all the time.
Right.
Like, he can't get ahead. He's the real world Shazam.
He's the antithesis to some degree, too, of, you know, everything in the Shazam family, in the Marvel family. It's like you said, it's like this good-natured, happy, you know, the Leave It to Beaver side of comic book superheroes. You know, I mean, from the Fawcett era and just that character growing up in that golden age, and it always he's always had that feel to him no matter what. And Black Adam, on the other hand, is, you know, the complete sort of opposite of that, where he has to deal with, you know, extremely serious and real-life situations in his life that, for whatever reason, you know, the charmed Marvel family has never had.
I'm glad everything is fine in Fawcett City. I have to go back to my oppressed country, you know, where I'm from. Kind of, you know, it's...
He's got that streak of... You can see him... He could be a hero. You know, there's that noble streak
and
in
he
him
has
that's
been.
Not...
He's been heroic to some
he's
degree.
He's been heroic, but he's always got an element of... touch too much brutality.
Yeah.
There's always like a little bit, he always goes a little bit too far, you know, just when you're like, oh, he's not a bad guy, you know, like I can understand, and then he does something and you're like, oh God, Jesus, you know. You know, so in the week where he destroys an entire country and kills all the people in it, well, guess what? Black Adam's a fucking villain.
Right.
You know, like, there's no... Like, in the last issue 49, where they have the thing, you know, where it is that sort of twisted say-it-ain't-so scene where Adam Smasher's like, it wasn't really you that did that, because if you did it, we can't let you go back to Kandak. You can't be the leader there anymore. And it's sort of like... He can't catch a break. And all he wants to do is protect his country and protect his people, but it's... I mean, that's the whole thing with the scene with ISIS, where the four horsemen, developed by Egg Foo and his science squad...
Don't call him Egg Foo.
Yeah, it's one of the 10 forbidden names. But when he... You know, his whole story arc in the story is he starts off being, you know, this brutal character... who meets someone who gives him some sort of hope that he could live sort of a good life. And then that gets taken away. Not only does it get taken away, But the woman he fell in love with tells him before she dies to go avenge him because the rest of the world doesn't deserve.
Yeah, it corrupts her.
Yeah,
yeah. You know,
she's,
you know,
she's like this completely angelic, saintly character the whole way through, and then finally it's like the world has finally just weared her down to the point where
she's like, I was wrong, you were right, you go know, kick their ass.
Yeah.
Which, for him, you know, and like I said, he's a character who his origin is from the loss of his family, and, you know, in between...
You know what's funny about Black Adam? He showed up in one Golden Age story.
Yeah.
And he died.
No one ever died.
Nobody ever dies.
But he's a complete... He's a complete modern DC character in a way. Like, every character trait he has been completely... within the last, like, 15 years.
Sure.
Yeah, and I think that makes him sort of a unique character.
But he has such a tie to...
Yeah,
the Golden Age.
Well, he kind of reminds me of when Magneto was an interesting character. You know, that's always what made...
When was that?
There was a time, Tom, before he was completely overused.
Wasn't he was a baby?
Magneto baby.
Baby Magneto.
It's when they played helmet. On the... It's whenever you could...
Brian
you could
Posehn
understand what
Magneto
he was doing.
Bathtub.
And I think that's where Black Adam... It's like, you know, what he does is wrong, but you can understand why he is doing it. And to see him totally worn down...
Well, he's a more realistic character. It's like, you know, as heroic, you know, it's like... we wish that we could all be the
Superman.
Likelihood that we would ever act like, you know, like Ralph Dibny when his, you know, with Sue's, you know, being killed like that and him not extracting revenge on Eclipso when he has the chance. You know, I wouldn't have the moral fortitude to not extract that kind of revenge on her. You know what I mean?
I think it's great because I think it's such a contrast. It's that one character in the story that... A story about how everyone ends up being a hero. Black Adam ends up... He's a villain.
He is. Well, he goes
he's
back to what he is.
He's more villainous than you thought he was, you know. Because it's easy to be like, oh, yeah, he deserved it. But then you're like, God, he destroyed an entire fucking country.
He killed, like, 2 million people.
Yeah, like, God, you know, that he is a villain. There's no gray area.
It just sucked. I mean, it was just like... You felt he's such a tragic character because he, like you said, he can't catch a break. It's just, it is his destiny to be
such a tortured soul.
Yeah,
destiny.
Evil. I mean, it's just you know what I mean. It's like he doesn't have a choice. As much as he's tried,
if he only took medication,
maybe that would help. But
he's bipolar.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that bipolar character, and this is slowly turned into one of the most entertaining, funny storylines in 52. And they're
it's the reality TV show.
Probably the
Mad
best,
Scientist.
Yeah, the best humor moments
the four
have been on Oolong Island.
The miniseries I want to see is the Oolong Island miniseries.
Yeah,
all the fucking weird doctors.
It's like The Prisoner meets The Surreal Life.
Crazy.
Every single fucking weird DC
psychotic
doctor and mad scientist. Like, what an absolutely amazing idea to take all your mad scientists
put
them on an island.
With unlimited
budgets.
Yeah. I mean, the character is, like, IQ, the guy who gets smarter the more tan he is. And, like, just, like, the crazy shit. That, like, all these... You know, most of those doctors... come from the Dial H for Hero, like House of Mystery, where it was the kid who would have a machine that he could dial to become a hero. Like, IQ, the doctor who becomes smarter, the more tan he gets. It's from that. Like, oh, just, like, how many crazy, weird fucking doctors.
It's like, how many doctors we got? We got to get some doctors together.
The fact that they fucking brought back Egg Foo, the most goddamn ridiculous character.
And
making him badass.
Yeah, yeah, and an interesting
character. You got the Metal Man, you got...
Tomorrow.
I posted this on the forum. If anyone would have told me, like, a year ago that someone could write a legitimately touching scene between Will Magnus and Tio Amaro, I would have laughed. But then the scene where, in the last issue, where Magnus saves Tio Amaro by stealing Savannah's teleporting, you know, it was like, oh, that's really touching. You know, like, oh, that's a really nice scene, you know, where Tio Amaro admits that he's just been a total dick to Magnus, you know.
Well, Magnus always said, you know, throughout the whole series, like, well, I just overlooked the psychotic supervillain part of it.
He was my best teacher.
He was my best teacher.
You're my best teacher.
Oh, I just love Savannah in that whole series, any of the stuff he was in, because he was like king of the mad scientists, you know what I mean? It's like he looked down on the rest of them.
Yeah.
You know, he sort of like, you know,
well, he was like, I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to go find my teleporting.
Yeah, he's just like, he's only there because he can do whatever he wants and he has unlimited funds and stuff. But yeah, like he could leave anytime he really wanted to.
I loved Tio Amaro and the fact that he so was wearing like a Hawaiian shirt and
has
a drink. And then one of my favorite things was when he was bidding on the Red Tornado.
eBay. Quiet. The bidding has reached a critical juncture.
There's 5 minutes left. But like, just, and then all the Dr. Goggles.
Or what was the one guy that kept making the giant insect robots?
Oh yeah, it's like Dr. Bug or
Cyclops.
Dr. the guy who has the one eye is always like shooting a gun.
Which, you
what
know,
are
that,
we going
to
do? Black Adam's coming.
Well, and we'll go backwards here in a second, but they had created the Four Horsemen, which it's revealed was the
Monster Society of
Evil,
right? Dr. Mind's Monster Society of Evil. That's who the Four Horsemen were.
Did they mention?
Sabik said that.
They said you used to know us as.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
He's like, we used to be called, or we were once called, the Monster Society of Evil. That's why it comes back to the whole Mr. Mind thing.
Mr. Mind.
You know, we talked about this earlier.
And I remember way back when, I think the first time that you had brought up 52 as the top of the stack is, and I hadn't been reading the series at that point, and you said that the Black Adam family has found their talkie-tawny. And it's
squawky-crocky.
And you had said you had told us that it was Mr. Mind, an evolved Mr. Mind, because in the first issue we find out that Savannah had Mr. Mind trapped in a jar and was irradiating him with
time particles.
Suspendium. That's right. And then later on, like issue 3 or 4 or whatever, when Savannah's captured and brought to Oolong Island, they find the jar empty with just a cocoon.
A broken up cocoon.
So it seems to, your theory seems to hold some weight. But now they've never come back and said that he was Mr. Mind, but he did mention the Monster Society of
Evil.
That
was the best part about the Black Adam family was Squawky Crocky 8 Black Marvel
that
Jr.
That sucked. I was so upset because I really liked the Isis character. Or Osiris.
Osiris.
And yeah, I must have liked him a lot to get his name wrong.
Yeah. My favorite character.
See, I thought he was annoying from the get-go. He's just
what
like
a whiny ass.
And
well,
so you've just been given the power of the gods, and all you can do is complain
about
it.
Yeah.
I'm bored. I want to go. It's like, shut up, you little shit. Fucking.
By the Teen Titans abandoned him.
That kind of bothered me. Is once you're a Teen Titan, wouldn't they stand behind him?
Well, he was a killer, dude.
The thing with Osiris, though, is, and he's like even a worse version of Black Adam, is he completely refuses to acknowledge reality.
Right.
Of like what's going on.
Insane,
he thinks
truly.
He believes that his powers are. He doesn't ever take a step back, but he's like a kid. I mean, he's like, he doesn't acknowledge how the rest of the world actually is in relation to him. And just like the rest of the Teen Titans, like even in the scene in the Rock of Eternity where Captain Marvel Jr. sort of stands up for him, he doesn't. I mean, he's just like, "Oh no, I won't do that."
Right.
Like
he's an impetuous child.
But
not even like a teen. He's like an 8-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, it's like reality doesn't exist. What I want right now is all that matters. Nothing else. You know, I have 2 kids. I have a 4-year-old daughter who, when she wants something, there is no other reality. Nothing else matters. It's like
let's go beat up robots.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, nothing, even the concept of anything else existing just doesn't matter. You know what I mean? It's like that's all that matters at that time.
It was still really sad whenever the crocodile ate him.
Yeah.
I thought it was a great moment, though.
You love that. You love that. But you turn that page crapola. And you're like, holy.
Yeah. Yeah. That was. I thought that was awesome.
For some lamb and hummus. Oh, so back.
Well, he's so hungry. And you want to talk about, you know, the gradual reveal. They're always. He was always talking about how he was hungry.
Oh, yeah. From the very beginning. Well, when he first jumps into the Thanksgiving Day dinner of the Savannah family, it's like he's starving.
Yeah,
you know,
and then it's revealed that he is famine of the four horsemen. And you're like, oh, duh. He's like, yeah,
and then Apocalypse showed up. And then Gambit is death. I got all my four horsemen all mixed up. Company.
Archangel, no. Why? No, Metal Wings?
Oh, God. Wolverine?
I am Matt Fraction, and this is Around Comics, and it's a podcast that you listen to on your pod, and it's casted to your pod, and you can listen to it, and it's sweet. And I love it, and I love you.
In 52, we do have a story taking place off-planet, and that is the Adam Strange, Animal Man, Starfire story. Mm-hmm. These are the...
Sexy.
These are the folks that, that have been...
Hot story.
From the Ran Thanagar war part of Infinite Crisis, and they didn't make it back to Earth, along with a few others. So this is their story of trying to get back home.
Yeah, it was interesting, you know, with those three characters so completely sort of different characters that have nothing to do with one another, mm-hmm. but how they kind of are put in a situation where they're forced to protect one another and help one another and work together to try and get home, and they all... sort of have different outlooks on what they're trying to do. You know, it's like Starfire has a completely different perspective on what's going on than, like, Animal Man. You know, sure. Buddy's like, all he cares about is getting back to his family. You know, and Starfire has no family, and it's like she's more worried about, you know, sort of getting back to help or to find out what's going on.
And space isn't that big of a deal for her.
For her,
she's
yeah,
an alien, and Buddy is he's terrestrial. He's all about being on the Earth, because his powers all derive from being in contact with animals. And
then there's Adam Strange, who's blind, and I don't know what his deal is.
You know, the eyes. Okay, who has whose eyes in this series? Where is Alan Scott's eye? Because the one eye that he does have isn't his.
Well, then you got the emerald eye of...
Akron,
there's going to be a miniseries called Eyes of the DC. You find out
where everyone's eyes.
Wait, does Alan Scott have one of Adam Strange's eyes?
Possibly. I don't know. They haven't said. They haven't revealed.
Does it matter?
No, I don't think it matters. But it'd be interesting to find out why they wrote that in. Eyes? It's like, why there has to be some purpose to it. Why did they put any of that in?
The storyline, though, doesn't fit to me as well into the whole narrative. But you have really nice character moments, like Adam Strange sort of admitting that he sort of likes his wife not being on Earth because
he's can
afraid.
Leave her at any time.
No, he's afraid that if she saw him around, like, other superheroes, that she wouldn't think he's that great, because he's like hot shit on Ron, but that's because all the guys on Ron are huge pussies. You know, like, and because he's just a normal guy, he like looks awesome,
right.
But like on Earth, he's not that hot as shit. You know, like,
right.
He's always afraid,
buddy.
That, you know, he's like, God,
if
she
if
sees
she's
me around Superman, yeah,
I'm fucked.
Yeah, next to Superman, what chance do I have? Yeah,
for a lot of people. I'm sure they were very glad to see Lobo for the first time in a long time in the
sure.
DCU.
I'll be glad to see Lobo leave again.
Lobo
okay.
with a Pope hat, leading a church full of fish people and...
The fish god.
Fish god, I don't know. Lobo's one of those weird characters.
He's
that
okay to see every once in a while, but I don't want to see him hang around too long.
Well, you know, he's become... such a caricature of a caricature. I mean, you know, initially I think, you know, I don't know the origin of Lobo, but, you know, he always seemed like...
Well, back in the 90s.
Making fun of Wolverine, kind of, you know, of a character where it's like he can't die, he's psychotic, he's, you know, and it always seemed like a parody of Wolverine to me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And it got worse and worse and worse, where it was like even so far away from that at points that I don't even know what he was.
Now,
you know.
Now there's some like Legion stuff going on in here. The Emerald Eye, isn't that the Emerald Empress, who is one of the The Fatal Five, isn't that?
Yeah.
Doesn't she have the Emerald Eye?
Yeah, you're gonna make my head spin. I like to always forget whenever they get rid of old Legion stuff. I just shove it aside and never think about it.
It's the best.
It's the best way. Policy, I don't. Yeah. I can't spend too. I always erase every non-continuity stuff out of my head, every reboot. Just forget about the old Legion stuff. Never think about it ever again. Ever.
Well, I think the whole, that was probably my least favorite storyline in the book was Animal Man.
I'm liking it more and more all the time, though.
You know, I liked it, but it wasn't that interesting to me. I think now with Animal Man and the situation that he's in and, you know, and we talked about it earlier, it's like his, you know, self-awareness of being a comic book
his comic awareness, which we have a couple instances of. Ambush Bug
right
is talking about 52 and, you know, and knows what he
and
is.
And if you've read the Grant Morrison Animal Man, I mean, that's where it all stems from.
Yeah.
And Morrison's
Ambush
involved.
Ambush Bug. He was in 52.
Yes, he was. Yeah. He was one of the new
JLA.
The JLA that lasted one issue.
That was so funny when Firestorm is calling Ollie. Say, hey, you want to be in the JLA?
Who's calling?
Yeah, he's like,
who are you? What are you doing with this? How'd you get this frequency?
Yeah.
He's gonna come and confiscate this tomorrow.
And what was it? Super Chief died.
Yeah.
Showed up Super and then died.
Yeah, like what was that? It was like they start
Morrison
out with
just like Super Chief,
but he wastes them. What is? I mean, it's like he brings them back. New Super Chief.
Super Chief has a long history of dying almost immediately after.
Oh, and it was great.
A long and storied history.
And that was a great way. You know, he dies and then falls into hell where Ralph
picks up.
Hope you learned a lesson, Ralph Dibny.
Ralph Dibny, learn your lesson.
Which he doesn't, unfortunately.
And then he does.
Well,
he learns a lesson.
A lesson.
Maybe not the lesson.
The lesson.
Well, if you're going to... I don't want to learn a lesson from Faust anyway, you know, because all his lessons
Yeah,
are
it's
like,
not going to be good anyway. You're not going to...
Dude,
pick up some sort
so
of,
much.
But we see some Green disease. Lanterns at this point with the who's
Captain
the,
Comet? You see
the planet? What's the planet Green Lantern?
Mogo,
which was kind of cool.
See the living Captain Comet in one of the issues.
Uh-huh. Which
sort of is a precursor to Mystery in Space.
Absolutely, which we talked about a little bit earlier. Whitey Styx is a character that is introduced in 52 that has come back in the Omega Man and Mystery in Space, and I think is an interesting new villain for the cosmic DC.
Well, space
stories.
Space.
But I think where Buddy is now with the aliens that have once again abducted him and
modified him.
Yeah, made him something else. I don't know what he is now. But
what did they see? What was it that they saw
52?
That no one wants them to know? I bet Darkseid doesn't want them to tell on
them. Let's not go there. We don't want
to. But we'll see if Starfire and Adam Strange make it back to
Starfire
Earth.
Starfire and Animal Man do it.
Buddy saves the day.
Well, there's a moment
totally
where
Morrison.
Buddy sees his wife, and there's a man that, you know, puts his hand on her shoulder.
It's going to be Buddy.
It's got to be. But
it plays back to an old did you read that story yet in the old Animal Man where, like, this mysterious figure...
Yeah.
But it ends up being...
Right, him, yeah.
I mean, that's such a throwback to that story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be...
But
or
he,
that,
but
or
could
it's going to be Darkseid. It could be...
Really? Darkseid? What?
It's good that you've gotten over your
Why is he wearing
morning.
A suit?
The new Darkseid.
It's good you got... Now, what are you... That's fan fiction, my friend.
Yeah.
Darkseid and Animal
Dark
Man's
and
wife.
Alan Barker. Buddy Baker. Alan Baker.
I thought there was some
going
sort of...
pizza.
You know, probably my favorite part of that whole storyline was the Animal Man stuff because he was such a
fish out of water.
And really... You know, way out of his element, but at the same time, he's just like, you know, he kind of knows that he has more story to tell, and he's not done. You know, even says
well, the part
it at some
where
point.
He dies, where he's like, "Hey, everyone's rooting for us."
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, look, there they are, right outside of the.
Yeah, and he's pointing at you, the reader. Yeah. Look, they're all rooting for us.
That's well, all Morrison. I mean, that's
I think the last storylines here, which are all very small storylines, kind of brings us back to the beginning, and that is the void that has been created by Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman not being around. And they do all make
Slackers.
Appearances in 52.
Yep.
That brings up... Well, go ahead. I wanted to say one of my a moment I liked was when Clark is given the assignment by Perry to get the interview with Supernova, and he fails, and Perry fires him, and then he jumps out the window,
knowing that Supernova.
And even, you know, he says it to Lois later. It's like, hey, you wrote the book on that. I mean, that, and that was how, you know, Lois got the story with Superman. I just thought that was kind of a cute moment. But
that was. And we do see these characters throughout 52. It took me two times of seeing it to realize that the woman, Nanda Parood. Diana.
Yeah.
And that she's,
what?
You know, everyone's kind of going to this monastery to find themselves.
Everyone's acting like it's really easy to get there, too.
I don't know.
It's really hard.
In the Himalayas.
Stuff.
Hey, 9,999 steps.
An invisible jet gets you anywhere.
Gets you anywhere you want to go.
Does she have an invisible jet anymore?
I believe so.
I don't know. Yeah.
I think it showed up in Wonder Woman.
It would be hard to know.
I don't know. I haven't seen it, Tom.
Wouldn't it? It'd be hard to know.
Well, it is interesting, the whole Nanda. What is it?
Nanda.
We're going to call it the NP.
NP.
The big NP.
It's like everybody has sort of gone there at some point. I mean, not everybody, but you know, a lot of the characters have ended up there for whatever reason. I don't really know.
It's the hang.
Is that a new place?
I don't know. No. Richard Dragon. Yeah. The guy who trained the Question was there.
But, like, you know, no Bruce Wayne. Bruce Wayne ends up there.
Yeah, it's been around in like the kung fu stuff.
Okay, very mystic. Yeah. It's more Morrison. Probably.
The mystical East.
Oh, very interesting.
The Beatles went there back in '68.
Naboo.
Naboo. No, Dr.
Fair.
What else? What else happened in this series?
Well, you know, it does touch on the Batman, Tim Drake, and Dick Grayson journey, and how Dick kind of says, you know what? Yeah, I'm done. I figured.
Well,
you know.
I mean, long story short, Batman gets the Dick part of him cut out by a 10-eyed man.
What?
The part where he stops, pretty much he goes to the desert to fight someone, so all the asshole in him gets, like, taken out, so he's not a huge dick to everyone anymore.
And it does, and that's not a good thing.
No, and then he finds, you know, he has to find a new purpose.
And apparently.
You can be Batman without being an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hey, it sucks, you know, your parents got shot by a criminal. All right, cool.
So,
you don't have to be up in everyone's face all the time. Like,
don't be such a dick
about it. God,
not our fault.
What an ass.
So as we sit now, issue 50 has come out. We've got two more issues, and we are.
And then we'll do our wrap up.
And then we'll do the wrap up. See you then.
No, we're gonna do.
In the meantime, we'll be everywhere.
When Countdown gets down to issue 4.
we'll do our Countdown. We're almost at the end, everyone. The best part is when this comes out, World War III came out the day before, which I'm sure is what everyone will be way more interested in.
We
fucked ourselves and the listeners. Everyone wins.
So, what are your predictions? Last two issues?
Oh, hell, I don't know.
World War III? How's this going to wrap up?
I predict we're going to spend a lot more money on another weekly book.
Yeah, Darkseid will show up and he'll hug everyone and say,
honestly, I don't
great
know.
Run,
I mean,
guys.
You know, I think, you know, everything's leading, you know, what is 52? What does it mean? What, you know, and there's been.
What is 52?
52 readers will receive a $1,000 check in their book.
Sweet. It's like a golden ticket.
I don't know.
Is it 52 universes?
I don't know. Is it
the multiverse? Is it, you know?
Yeah, it's something.
Who
like
knows?
That.
When you got, like, Grant Morrison involved, it could
52
be anything.
Colors
it could be
the rainbow.
52 marshmallow shapes on a snowflake.
52 android presidents.
52
could
fucking
be,
inches, I'm going to give you.
It could be anything.
Oh, my lord.
But I don't know. I don't really care. I don't really care what. I care. It's not, but, like.
I don't care what happens.
I don't mean that. I just
I'm
mean,
dropping the book after this week.
We've stuck.
I want to. If anyone out there has dropped, like, you know, when the book sales go down, I'm always like, who the fuck's been buying 52 for 48
and
weeks?
And then all of a sudden,
it was like, you know what?
Fuck it.
Did you? Did you drop 52 after 4?
I've seen people like stop in like the 30s.
Really?
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
You think you get that deep into it? you know, it's like
FedEx
took
a dip in the middle. Sales took a dip in the middle, and now they've picked back up.
Interesting.
And then World War III is coming out this week.
So yeah, there you go.
That's crazy.
Well, once I get to 51, I'm gonna drop it. 51 doesn't pay off.
Forget it.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Forget it.
Because you know that whatever your expectations are, it'll never be able to meet it.
Yeah, so. 51. If 51 is a disappointment, 52, I'm dropping it.
Well, the one thing I will say about the series is that I'm amazed at how much I now like am immersed in the DC universe and how much I'm enjoying it and how much I want to know more about
it.
You
want to read The Metal Man?
Yeah, absolutely. I want to know, like, you know, I've gotten completely obsessed
Mercury
with this.
Mercury is not the only metal that's liquid.
Well, yeah, but have you ever talked to gallium?
Yeah.
It's
boring.
But I think, you know, overall, like we said, you know, it's been a successful weekly book. They've been on time. There's been no huge screw-ups, really. The art's been good for the most part. The story's been
Keith Gibbons kind of been the I don't want to call him unsung because I think a lot of people realize what an amazing job he's done.
He's the song hero.
He is the song hero.
Keith Gibbons.
He's done a hell of a job on the layouts, keeping consistency in the look of it.
Yeah, Keith Gibbons is responsible for Lobo.
He created Lobo. All right. Well, overall, I don't know. I like the I think it has a lot of rereadability. I think you can go back and read it a couple of times. I think, for me, like I said, I was surprised how much I've enjoyed a weekly book, how much I've enjoyed being able to pick up the story.
It was the best mini-series of the year.
It's definitely
52 issues.
And I would recommend people that like have been reading 52 and... or if you're going to start reading 52, check out the Wikipedia article on 52. Some crazy, like, obsessive compulsive people have gone on there and posted, like, every instance of where 52 has ever shown up in the book.
And, like, Roman numerals.
There's, like, crazy stuff. Like, there's a whole breakdown of everything that's on the chalkboard in Rip Hunter's lab. And, I mean, there's just, you know, issue by issue, like, there's a whole section of each issue and where 52 showed up. Like, here's just an example. On week 37, on day one during their fight with Skeets in the Fortress of Solitude, Rip Hunter begins a countdown at 52:51, during which he and Booster Gold are whisked away through time to escape Skeets.
Hiding in the Bottle City of Canterbury was awesome. I love that.
In the tiny Bottle City.
Steel, week 8, Steel watches WL2. A news channel. In Roman numerals, L2 means 52.
They're talking about the board in Rip Hunter's lab, and things like there was written dead by lead, and it was the lead metal man that killed Egg Foo, and you know, stuff like that.
That is one of the forbidden names.
I will kill anyone.
Yeah, so the Wikipedia article
it's just got an insane amount of, you know,
breaks down all the main storylines and all that stuff. So, yeah, looking forward to Countdown.
Yeah, I'm interested to see what sort of take they're going to do with it. You know, how it's going to be different from 52.
I think it's going to be a completely different creature.
I think so, too.
And it's not going to be four people writing every issue.
Right. Yeah. But I just think, like, what the stories there, you know, are they going to take more B-list characters? Or are they going to go, you know, is it going to be more Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman? You know, how is it going to, you know... We don't have 1 year later where the DC Universe has skipped ahead. So this stuff is all going to be told.
Does it happen right after the end of 52, which would technically be still a year behind?
Well, that's what I mean. It's like how... Yeah, where...
We'll figure it out.
We'll find out. But it'll be interesting.
All right.
Well, hey, good job, DC. Morrison, Rucka, Johns, Wade, Giffen, and a variety of artists gave us a very fun, compelling... weekly series over a year.
Yes, they did.
All right.
Good stuff.
All right.
If you haven't read it, don't listen. All right. Oh, too late.
If you have read it, then you've just listened to us, like, have the nerdiest conversation.
Well, hey, what the hell?
Hey.
It's been 90 episodes.
90 or so.
Broke out the nerd.
The true nerd. Yeah. You didn't even hear the worst.
Oh, so, God.
Yeah, that was all off mic. Well, it was the year of 52, but you know what else it was the year of, or is the year of?
Alan Moore.
It's the year of Alan Moore.
I'm kind of tired of that already.
It's like a charade, isn't it, really?
We're not really.
Like, we're all lying about how
much
we're enjoying
it.
I have, but...
Because I've read all of it already, most of it at least, and it's like, eh.
Well, it's...
I got other shit to read right
now. We committed ourselves to this.
I didn't. You guys were all for it. I was like,
I'm still all for it. I mean, I think it's sort of a personal journey for everyone.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna finish reading From Hell while I'm on vacation, and I've already read the
on your
DC
honeymoon?
Universe series of Alan Moore.
From Hell, romantic. Yeah, that'll go well.
And then he's gonna slaughter a hooker or two in the Caribbean. Yeah. What the hell?
Well, Marta's into that.
So if you want details about the year of Alan Moore and our little Alan Moore book club, you can go
honey,
to...
Honey,
want
to play Stab the Hooker again?
Comics.com for that.
Freemasons.
Oh, folks, you can help us spread the Around Comics love. All the ways you can do that, you can take us up on our Listener LCS Challenge. There's
Please.
Details about that at the website.
Yes.
You can become our
Challenge
virtual
me.
Friend at comicspace.com/aroundcomics or at myspace.com/aroundcomics.
Or you can do Chris's favorite and leave us an iTunes review.
Chris is not everyone's favorite, though. You can check out all of our favorite things at aroundcomics.com. It's your source of the best in comic news, reviews, and opinions.
We are proud members of the comics...
Members?
We are proud members of the comics... I want to listen to this. I want to hear if you can tell that, like, the fucking... Like the stoner smorgasbord that was laid out of fucking donuts, popcorn,
two sandwiches and an apple.
Who had the apple?
I had the apple.
You're
so
I knew you
conscious.
Liked that apple, Tom.
I did. It was delicious.
All right, enough apple.
Right. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network. You can find more great podcasts at comicspodcasts.com.
Just so everyone is aware, we will post next week's topic on Tuesday at our forum at aroundcomics.com. Thank you once again to InStockTrades.com for sponsoring the show. If you're waiting for the trade, it has never been easier. InStockTrades.com offers a huge selection of the collected editions you need. InStockTrades.com is your source for trade paperbacks, deluxe hardcovers, essentials, showcases, archives, absolute editions, omnibus editions, and more. All at great discounted prices. And remember that all orders over $50 ship for free. Whether you're buying an absolute or catching up on showcases and essentials, InStockTrades.com is your new best friend.
As soon as 52 comes out in trade, it's going to be a good place to get it.
I'm waiting for the absolute 52 volume.
I'm waiting for 52 to come out on computer chip for my mind.
Ooh, hologram-inserted mind.
It changes every time you
comic.
Read it. We are proud to help support the Hero Initiative. Hero creates a financial safety net for yesterday's creators who may need emergency medical aid, financial support for essentials of life, and an avenue back into paying work. It's a chance for all of us to give something back to the people who have given us so much enjoyment. For more information, visit heroinitiative.org or call 310-909-7809 and say Tom sent you.
Yes. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. That would be you two. And
You're
me.
Welcome.
We had no choice.
I was
here every
Friday. I was kidnapped.
Yelling at me for stopping for coffee today.
I was man-napped.
It's kind of like our own little Oolong Island, isn't it?
Island of mad scientists.
Everyone, have a fantastic rest of your week.
Don't
we'll
tell me what to do.
We'll be back again on Monday with another new episode. In the meantime,
in between time,
we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Nerdy conversation.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. Music for the show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Music.podshow.com. Views expressed in the interviews or by guests of the show are solely those of the individuals expressing them and do not reflect the opinions of Around Comics. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next time when the panel will change, but our mission will stay the same. Bringing you the very best news, reviews, and opinions in and around comics. Around Comics is a Pipe Dream production. Copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Love you, babe. Yeah. Why you got my love and left me alone? Why you got my left alone?
love you one more time.